Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, December 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as two professional handicappers join me. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We're trying to hit every remaining bowl game, except obviously for the national championship game on today's segment. And then if we have some time, take a look at week 17 in the NFL. Second half of today's show, Tony George from Doc Sports will join me. We'll take a look at three of the bowl games with him, and then take a little bit of a deeper dive into week 17 of the NFL. Great stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. NHL is back, which means Parker Michaels is back. We've got situational betting articles, tons of stuff for you to check out over there at the website. Make sure you head on over there and do that. Also, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is the promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook up to $500. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well up to $500. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Of course, over at bangthebook.com as well, our free pick contest is going on. Cash prizes available for those. You can join the Daily Streaker at any time, but with a new month coming up here, those monthly contests will reset and give you a good opportunity to win some cash prizes in those. All right, short and sweet intro here today because we've got Brad Powers from Brad Powers Sports on the line. We're going to do all of the remaining bowl games if we can. Brad, how's it going today, man? All right, seem to be having some issues with the switchboard here. Hopefully we can get Brad on the line in a second. Of course, you know, it's not like we've got a ton to try and talk about here on today's show or anything, but Brad, how's it going, man?
Man, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
I'm doing well, buddy. Apologies there for the little bit of a delay, but let's go ahead and dive in, and let's start by talking about how great that Cheez-It Bowl was last night.
Yeah, I only watched a little bit of it. That was not good football, to say the least. But, I mean, unless you like defense, and unless you had an under ticket, you had to feel pretty good about yourself. But, that was one that didn't necessarily progress the sport too much into the future. Hopefully we don't see too many more of those.
Yeah, that's one of those games where you get the argument of there are too many bowl games. And overall, I disagree, but maybe in the case of that game last night, certainly could have been the case. But most of the games that we're going to talk about here today should be very, very good games as we're getting into, you know, some of the real quality teams here in college football. Let's start Friday afternoon, Music City Bowl in Nashville, Auburn and Purdue. Auburn was a 4-point favorite at open. A lot of threes minus $1.15 out there now.
Yeah, and I agree with the line move. I think just Purdue, generally speaking, is more excited to be there. Why? I mean, first and foremost, their head coach, Jeff Brom, decided to stay there in West Lafayette instead of going back to his alma mater at Louisville. So I think those players are relatively excited. Purdue just being in any bowl game when they – I mean, this was a doormat of the Big Ten just a couple years ago before Jeff Brom took over. Auburn, I got to think when they set off their expectations preseason, I got to think a bowl game in Nashville, Tennessee against Purdue wasn't high on their priority list. So Purdue more excited. I lean Purdue. I actually lean the over more than anything. I do think Gus Malzahn, since he's taken over the play calling, I'll have a little bit of a different. He better because he's on the hot seat this entire calendar year, starting with this bowl game. On top of that, you look at a Purdue pass defense is bottom 10 in the country. But on the flip side, I mean, David Blough has put up 300-plus passing yards in 8 of his last 10 games. I lean with the over as well as Purdue.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty smart way to look there in that game. I mean, I do think Nick Holt is a phenomenal defensive coordinator for Purdue. And, you know, something that stood out to me a little bit, obviously the game that kept Ohio State out of the college football playoff was that loss to Purdue. There was nothing fluky about that game. I thought Purdue was almost as fast as Ohio State in some facets of that game. So maybe the SEC speed here for Auburn could be contained a little bit. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But really excited to watch that one here on Friday afternoon. Camping World Bowl down in Orlando. West Virginia opened a 7.5-point favorite. Will Grier said, yeah, I'm going to sit out. I'm going to prep for the NFL draft. And this line moved a ton. Now we're up to Syracuse -2. A lot of guys sitting this game out, whether they're prepping for the NFL or just injured.
Yeah, I lean towards the Syracuse side here, although them missing a couple of defensive linemen, that news broke a couple of days ago, in case you missed, including one of the top sack men in the ACC. That's a little bit concerning, but I just look at it that Syracuse, again, and it's going to be almost a broken record here. More excited to be there. Why? I mean, this is their first bowl game since 2013. They haven't won 10 games in a season since 2001. Their fan base, I mean, Syracuse's fan base, sold out their allotment of tickets. I mean, they can't even sell out the Carrier Dome most weeks. So I think generally speaking, they're excited to be there. West Virginia, I mean, we don't know for sure, but I mean, the players, at least their best players, are kind of tipping their cap by sitting this one out. Dana Holgerson's a terrible bowl coach. I just think he's overrated, generally speaking. But he's failed to cover in 5 straight bowl games. I'll take the orange here, even though the line slipped to them being favored. As long as they're not laying 3, I'll take the orange here minus the points.
I like Syracuse here too. And something else about this game, you know, with Will Grier leaving, with those wide receivers leaving for West Virginia too, it's hardly coincidence that Dana Holgerson expressed his interest in the Texas Tech job. I mean, maybe he sees the writing on the wall here in Morgantown with the up-and-coming offensive players that he has. So maybe that's a factor in this game too, with, you know, those guys taking more of the spotlight for the Mountaineers.
Oh, that's an excellent point. And you're right. He did flirt with that job. And Texas Tech said no thanks. So that kind of tells you that Dana Holgerson's not necessarily looked in the best of light, even though he's had relatively decent success at West Virginia. That's another point that would be, in my opinion, favoring the orange here.
All right, let's go to the Alamo Bowl. This one, Iowa State, Washington State. Really, really intrigued by this game and also intrigued by the line move. Washington State was a 5-point favorite, and you can find a 2.5, even a 2.5 flat at BetOnline and Heritage for this game. A lot of Iowa State money coming in, Brad.
Yeah, and also at Westgate, sometimes when they take a position, they're one of the sharper books here in town in Vegas. So, I agree with the line move in this particular case. I mean, to me, it's more of a fade against Mike Leach. I mean, he's 1-7 against the spread in his last 8 bowl games. That's not a good look. And why is he struggling bowl games? Well, I mean, you get an entire month of prep for his quirky offense. I don't think it's going to be so quirky for Iowa State. They've already faced, you know, high-powered spread offenses like Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Texas Tech. What Iowa State do in those games against those top 20 offenses, they covered all 4 of those games. They won 3 of them outright. You look at Washington State, I mean, they're thinking possible college football playoff berth. They blew the game in the Apple Cup against Washington. They didn't get a New Year's Six bid, and even though they won 10 games. They got passed up over SEC teams like LSU and Florida, who only won 9 games. Iowa State, speaking of 9 games, they're trying to win 9 for the first time since 2000. I lean with the Cyclones here.
Yeah, for Washington State, the last 3 years for Mike Leach's teams, 20 points, 17 points, and 12 points. So not really what you would expect there from the Cougars. No, not at all. And also, too, Matt Campbell's a hell of a coach.
Yeah, and I mean, defensively, I get it. The Big 12 is known for its offense, but if there's 2 teams that play defense, or well, there's a couple teams that play defense, but I would definitely put Iowa State and one of the top 2 or 3 defenses in the Big 12 the last couple of years. So I don't think they hold Washington State under 20, but I definitely think that they hold Washington State well below their average. And the total sitting there in the mid-50s says that this game is going to be played more towards Iowa State side.
All right, let's go to Saturday here. Interesting game at the top of the board. It's not the first one chronologically, but it's the first one by rotation number. Arkansas State and Nevada in Tucson for the Arizona Bowl. I think it's the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Arkansas State open to pick. They're a 1.5-point favorite out there. What do you think about this largely forgotten Saturday game?
I disagree with the line move, which isn't usually the case when it comes to bowl action. I get in Nevada's, you know, one of their top wide receivers is going to transfer out, so that's a little bit of concern, but I think the market threw Nevada a little bit too much in the trash after the UNLV game where they blew that 23-0 lead. I mean, otherwise, if they don't blow the lead there, they come in this bowl game with 5 straight wins. Arkansas State, to me, was disappointing, even though they closed the season with 4 straight wins to make their record look respectable. Nevada's playing in more of their, you know, more of their part of the country as far as regionally speaking. Arkansas State doesn't play in the state of Arizona too often. So playing closer to home for Nevada, even though it's still a plane trip there. Arkansas State's lost three of their last four bowl games. I disagree. As far as that, and this is one where I've got to play my power ratings, and I think wrong team favorite here. I have Nevada by one.
Yeah, this was my biggest overlay of the season, or of the bowl season, in terms of power ratings here. I like Nevada a lot in this spot. Yeah, McLean Mannix leaving doesn't really help, but also this game in Tucson played in a little bit of altitude, so that should help the Wolfpack too, because Arkansas State, you know, just doesn't play in it. I get it. You know, Appalachian State looked good. Troy looked good. Georgia Southern won their bowl game. Louisiana gave it a good effort. But Arkansas State couldn't even win their division in the Sun Belt, and their division was terrible. So I mean, they really underachieved this year. I don't think they're that good of a team.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I was lining up to bet Arkansas State over their season win total at 8.5. I thought they'd be favored in every single game this year, with the exception of the Alabama game. They ended up being a dog at home to App State. App State, you know, obviously far exceeded expectations. We're a dog against Tulsa as well, but still we ended up, even though they underachieved, were favored in 9 of their games. I mean, I thought the Lafayette game was disappointing for them. Losing at Georgia Southern is disappointing. Yeah, I didn't like what I saw from Arkansas State nearly all the season. And I get it, they won their last four games, but who in the hell do they beat? South Alabama, Coastal Carolina, UL Monroe, Texas State. None of those teams are in a bowl game. So, yeah, I think Nevada played the tougher schedule. I just think they're the better team, wrong team favored. I'll probably use Nevada in the Golden Nugget contest when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and tell you, we took a minute. So, you know, hopefully that's one that does wind up being a winner for both of us. And by the way, you know, you're fourth in that, and kudos to you, man, for a hell of a run here, really the entire season in NFL and college football. But also, you know, you've been just on fire in the Nugget, and I'm certainly hoping for the best for you here this weekend in that. Let's go to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, Florida, Michigan. Michigan, 6-point favorite here. Man, I just look at this game, and I hate everything about this game. I have no interest in this game at all. What about you?
You know, I took a position on Florida, and now it doesn't do the listeners any good to say, hey, I got a Florida +7.5 ticket in my pocket, and now the line's 6. But I'll give a little credit to my dad, believe it or not. And I know that sounds pretty, nationally respected, but sometimes when you have people that are, you know, he's back home in Ohio, he's reading the message boards, and he's subscribed to all those Rivals and 247 sites. And, man, like 2 weeks ago, he told me some inside people said, hey, Michigan's going to be sitting not only Rashawn Gary at the time that we knew, but several other starters were also going to sit out. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about, Dad. I don't see that anywhere in the marketplace. I mean, I don't believe you whatsoever. And he was naming off players, running back, Devin Bush. I'm like, I don't see that anywhere, so I don't believe you. But lo and behold, 2 weeks later, all those players end up sitting out. So for once, I trusted my dad a little bit there and took the 7.5, and I'll tip the cap to him. I just think Florida's more excited to be there. Why? They're 4-7 last year. They got a chance to win 10 games first year under Dan Mullen. Michigan's one game away from going to the college football playoff. They had taken care of Northwestern had they beaten the Buckeyes. If it doesn't matter for captains like Caron Higdon and Devin Bush, you know, does it matter for the entire team? I don't think so. I'll take the Gators, even though they traditionally struggle with Michigan every time they play them. I'll take them +6, although obviously some value lost there a little bit.
I like it. I like, first of all, shout out to your dad for that, for sure. The thing that scares me is I don't know how Florida scores. I mean, Florida's had trouble all year scoring points. Maybe having Dan Mullen's a big help. I mean, Dan Mullen is a fantastic head coach. And I don't think that Harbaugh's much of a head coach as we've, you know, really seen in the Ohio State rivalry. The thing that's interesting to me here is Harbaugh actually going to leave for the NFL? And I mean, is that something that maybe the players kind of wonder about too? Like, I can't see it, but is that a distraction?
I could be. I don't know why he would. Urban Meyer's gone. I mean, he just signed his best recruiting class that he's had. I don't get that, but I guess you start looking at how long he's got an expiration date, no question about that, when you look at how long he lasted at San Diego and Stanford and San Francisco, and now And, you know, it's year four here. That's about as long as he lasts. I wouldn't be overly stunned, but as far as business sense, I mean, he's making more than $7 million a year at Michigan at your alma mater, and now Urban Meyer's gone. I would think he'd have unfinished business there at Michigan. I guess it's a little bit of a distraction, but I just don't get it. He makes that move. I guess it'd have to be a really good job in the NFL, but I'd stay in college. I mean, you can have a longer coaching career in college, and stay, you know, now with what they're paying you, you can almost make as much money.
I'm hoping he stays because I have to think that if he goes, I mean, he's signing some very good classes. The problem is he's not really maximizing his talent. Maybe now he can do it, you know, next year with Shea Patterson back again, but they would get an upgrade. I mean, they would have to get an upgrade at this point, right? I mean, the program is in such good shape from a talent standpoint. It would have to be an upgrade to Harbaugh, whoever they hired.
An upgrade from Harbaugh?
Yeah, I would think so. If they hired somebody new, it would have to be.
Oh, I don't believe that. I don't know why people put Michigan in this class like they're some national, perennial national title contender. I mean, they won a half a national title since 1948. I mean, they're a good, solid program that's one of the best in the Big Ten, but nationally speaking, I mean, it's never been about national titles and stuff for Michigan. I mean, Bo Schembechler never won a title. They call him the ringless hand, only went 2-8 in Rose Bowls. They're not the same level as Ohio State, so I think Harbaugh's as good of a coach as they've ever had there in the last, you know, 60, 70 years. So I don't think they can get an upgrade over Harbaugh. It's just, to me, it's a program that I gets treatment like a top five, and they're just not, if you look at historically speaking, at least, you know, the last 70 years in the college football realm.
All right, let's go to the Belk Bowl then. We'll go down to Charlotte, game 251, 252, South Carolina and Virginia. This number opens South Carolina -6. It's in that dead zone now between 4 and 6. A lot of fives out there in the market. What do you think about this game, Brad?
Yeah, I don't have a strong feel for this one. Obviously, Deebo Samuel, the wide receiver of South Carolina, he's going to sit that one out, focus on the NFL draft. That hurts them a little bit, but they got some other talented guys there, you know, Edwards on the outside. And I thought, you know, Bentley had his best game of his entire career in his final game against Clemson in the last game of the regular season. I also like, you know, Bryce Perkins, the quarterback for Virginia, only two players in college football ran for more than 800 yards and threw for more than 2,400 yards. That's Kyler Murray and Bryce Perkins, believe it or not, for Virginia. To me, I think South Carolina had the crowd edge. And one thing one of the handicapping tools, because you got so much time to dive into these games as far as bowls, I like to look at head-to-head as far as conferences. And the SEC went a perfect 7-0 against the spread against the ACC this year. Just a very slight lean on South Carolina -5.
I will revisit that stat here with one of the games coming up on New Year's Eve, but let's go to the college football playoff semifinal. We'll go to Oklahoma and Alabama here in the Orange Bowl. This is the second game, but it's the first one by rotation number, game 253, 254. Alabama still a 14-point favorite. Total on this game has come down into the 76 or 77 range out there. Was up in the 80s previously. What do you think, Brad? And anything swinging one way or another for you here?
Yeah, I lean Alabama for me. The total coming down says that, you know, Alabama, I mean, it's not going to be a shootout. Even though when the total's coming down, you're laying a hefty number, usually that would benefit the underdog. I don't think that's the case here. Obviously, Alabama deserves to be favored because of one side of the football, that being the significant, significant defensive edge that they have over the Sooners. And plus, you look at Hollywood Brown. He's the wide receiver for Oklahoma. He's their deep threat, can take the top off the defense. He's practicing. It looks like he's going to play, but is he going to be 100%? If he's not, then Alabama can probably put an extra guy up to spy Kyler Murray. I just trust Alabama in these types of games when they have a month to prep. I mean, outside of the semifinal against the Buckeyes, they've been relatively dominant in these semifinals. I mean, easy win and cover last year against Clemson. You know, beat to Washington by 17, beat Michigan State by 38. I'll roll tide here. It's not one of my favorite picks, but I'll lay the 14.
Does Oklahoma's success against Georgia's defense last year mean anything to you in this game?
Well, I mean, that's a good call there, and that's what gives me a little bit of pause. But that's because Georgia was really good defensively. That does give me pause, and that would be why I'm not having a big bet on Alabama. And I do think Alabama's better equipped to stopping a guy like Kyler Murray than what they were, say, 5 years ago. Why? Because they see a dual threat quarterback each and every week in practice in Tua Tagovailoa. So I'll say that, but yeah, that does give me some pause that Oklahoma against a vaunted SEC defense put up 48 last year. No question about it.
All right, so let's go to the other semifinal, 255-256, Notre Dame-Clemson. It's been a relatively steady stream of Clemson money. We haven't seen a whole lot of sharp involvement anyway on Notre Dame as of yet to drive this number back down. Some places open 10.5, some places open 11. We're sitting 12.5 or 13 right now. Obviously, Clemson with some distractions now and without Dexter Lawrence in all likelihood for this game. Notre Dame, Brandon Wimbush is transferring, so you know, if Ian Book gets hurt, who knows what the hell happens there. What do you think about this one, Brad?
Yeah, Wimbush should still be the backup. He's still with the team.
Okay.
He's not leaving until after the college football playoff's over, so they would still have Wimbush at quarterback. He's still there. You know, we did see a little bit of money on Notre Dame because it got as high as 13.5 and a few days ago prior to the suspension announcement for Dexter Lawrence, Notre Dame took a little bit of money. I'm going to lean with Notre Dame, believe it or not, in this one. I hear too much of the media narrative talking about 2012. I just don't get that at all. To talk about a game from 6 years ago, I mean, that just doesn't move the needle at all for me. If you want to talk about games from past years, let's talk about the last time these two teams played 3 years ago. Notre Dame would have easily covered the current number. Let's talk about Notre Dame against an SEC team last year. Beat LSU as far as, you know, talking about teams from the South and having a significant speed advantage. Notre Dame beats LSU in the bowl game and loses by a point against a Georgia team that almost won the national title. So I don't get to talk about Notre Dame. The stage is too big, and they're going to get killed like they did 6 years ago in the title game. I don't see that. Dexter Lawrence is a loss because if there was one significant edge Clemson had, it was at the line of scrimmage. Now, they still got guys like Christian Wilkins and Cleland Farrell and Austin Bryan on the outside, and I still think they have the edge over Notre Dame's offensive line, but missing a 350-pound defensive tackle that's going to go in the top 15 of the NFL draft, that is a loss, and I think he's worth about a half a point. And I'm a little bit worried about Clemson's defense. I mean, the ACC sucked this year. I think there's no bones about that. When they stepped out and played a couple of SEC teams, A&M, South Carolina, neither one of those two teams are, you know, I would say great offensively. They're good, but A&M put up 500 yards. South Carolina put up 600 yards. I think Notre Dame can have some success down the field in the pass game as long as Ian Book's getting protected. I'll take the Fighting Irish here plus the points.
Obviously, we've got two double-digit favorites here, so anything other than Alabama versus Clemson would be a surprise. What would your line be for the national championship game between Alabama and Clemson?
Bookmaker's line would be 7. I'd probably deal 7 with Alabama. Handicapping line, I would have Alabama 6.5. I'm a little bit higher on Clemson than most. And I think Clemson's got a little bit of an axe to grind with Alabama. But I definitely think that line comes right around a touchdown.
All right, let's go to the last day of 2018 here. 6 bowl games. We'll try to get through these quickly so we got time for Tuesday, January 1st games. Military Bowl, Virginia Tech, Cincinnati. Cincinnati, 5.5-point favorite here in Annapolis.
Yeah, I like Virginia Tech here. One of my favorite picks as far as that day goes in this one. To me, I got Virginia Tech higher than the marketplace. I mean, I got this game lined at pick. So this is one of my biggest overlays. It's just from a pure power rating. And I've had Virginia Tech power rated higher than the marketplace. I think giving Bud Foster an extra 15 practices, they get a couple guys more healthy, or they can get those younger guys on that defensive side of the ball more up to speed. I think it's a positive. They'll have the crowd edge there in Annapolis. And you look at the last 3 times Virginia Tech entered a bowl game 6-6, they won and covered all 3. I mean, they're trying to avoid their first losing season since 1992. And this is a great trend that I'll mention again that one of your other guests came up with, Ralph Michaels. You look at teams that won their final game of the regular season. They're 5-6. They win that last game to get the bowl eligibility to get to 6-6. Those teams since 2008 in bowl games, now 42-21 against the spread. I think VT is excited to be there. I'll take them plus the points.
All right, we'll go to El Paso for the Sun Bowl game, 259-260. Pitt and Stanford, seeing some Pitt money leak into the marketplace a little bit now, down from 6.5 to 5.5, even a couple stray 4.5s out there as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is people starting to take a look at Stanford's injury report. I mean, they're out without wide receiver Trent Irwin, left tackle Walker Little, right guard Nate Herbig, cornerback Murphy, defensive end Jackson, on top of Bryce Love being out, so walking wounding for Stanford. I really don't have much in this game. I can't make a strong case because I do think Pittsburgh's extremely one-dimensional on the offense side of the ball, and if Stanford can do anything, it would be to stop the run. So I think Stanford's built to stop Pittsburgh's one-dimensional offense, but I'm a little bit worried about that injury report. Kind of a pass for me. If you gave me $20, maybe I'd bet Stanford just because I respect David Shaw more than Pat Narduzzi.
All right, let's go to the Red Box Bowl. Michigan State, Oregon. Oregon, 2.5-point favorite in this one. And, man, this is a perplexing game to me because, as we all know, and as we saw once again yesterday, the Pac-12 is awful in bowl games. And Oregon right now, 2.5-point favorite against Sparty. Sparty is not good, but, I mean, they're pretty good in an underdog role usually.
Yeah, they are. And you look at and good in bowl games. Mark D'Antonio's on a 5-1. Straight up and against the spread run in bowl games, only loss was to Alabama when they were significantly outclassed as a double-digit underdog. I think significant advantage for D'Antonio over Mario Cristobal. Although Cristobal's recruiting well, I mean, whether it be freshmen coming in or recruiting his quarterback Justin Herbert to come back for another season, a lot of excitement around the Oregon program. But this is the type of game back against the wall that Michigan State's thrived in the last decade under Mark D'Antonio. Much better defense, played the tougher schedule. I'll take Sparty here plus the points.
You taking the points, or would you gamble on the money line there?
Oh, Dad, 2.5, you take the money line. So, and we've seen that in bowl games. I mean, hell, I mean, if you're going to bet the dog in a bowl game, forget the point spread. Just bet on the money line. You'll come, at least in the last 2 years, you'll come out way far ahead than just betting them against the spread. Last year, 16 of the 19 underdogs that covered won the game outright, and I think this year, of the five underdogs that have covered, I think four of them won outright.
All right, let's go to the Liberty Bowl here. Missouri, Oklahoma State. Missouri, 8-point favorite in this one against Mike Gundy and the Magnificent Mullet.
Yeah, I don't have much on this one. Just not a good feel. Oklahoma State's been a hot – both teams have been hot and cold all year. Not sure if I trust Missouri. I mean, we saw this story last year where they closed the season really strong and then played a Big 12 team in a bowl game and laid an egg against Texas. But on the flip side, I mean, Oklahoma State's a team that, yeah, and good for them. I mean, they can get up and beat Texas and West Virginia and nearly beat Oklahoma, but then get blown out by Texas Tech and Kansas State, losing road games, Baylor, TCU as a favorite. I mean, I trust Gundy a little bit more than Barry Odom, but with Justice Hill out, one of their best offensive linemen out, that's not a little bit of concern for me. Just a very slight lean on under 74.5. That's a high total for a bowl game when Oklahoma State's missing some key players on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, you mentioned Virginia Tech trying to keep a streak of winning seasons alive. Oklahoma State's had 12 winning seasons in a row. Need
Ooh,
a win here. Need an outright upset in this one. We'll see if the players, you know, sort of respond to that type of angle. But, you know, like you said, I mean, Oklahoma State, they're so hit or miss this year. And it's one of those things, too, where Taylor Cornelius can make a lot of throws and also misses a ton of throws. And that's something that Gundy really hasn't had to deal with for a while. So that does concern me a little bit here with the Cowboys in that one. How about the Holiday Bowl? Northwestern and Utah. Utah's a touchdown favorite out in San Diego.
Yeah, and I mean, Kyle Whittingham's been one of the best bowl coaches out there. I mean, he's 10-1. I don't know why they give credit to Urban Meyer and Kyle Whittingham for that Fiesta Bowl from 15 years ago. I don't get that. It's either one or the other. You can't give two wins to both coaches. I mean, Urban Meyer was still there, so you got to give it to them. So whenever you – I'm sorry, I'm going off on a little rant. We're tight on time, but I mean, it just bothers me that Kyle – a lot of people are, you know, crediting Kyle Whittingham with an 11-1 bowl mark. It's just – it's not true. I remember the game. I remember the situation. Tyler Huntley, more pertinent to this game and this season, the Utah quarterback, he missed the final four games. Looks like he's going to – come back and play, maybe not start. Although Utah on the negative side, their leading wide receiver, Covey, is going to sit this one out. Push comes to shove, even though Whittingham is really good in bowl games, I'm going to lean on the Northwestern side getting points. The dog in Northwestern games this year, the only time the dog didn't cover in a Northwestern game this year was the Big Ten championship game against the Buckeyes, and Northwestern was in that in the fourth quarter. So lower scoring game, both these teams are built fundamentally sound. I'll take Northwestern plus the touchdown.
Now, a stat that you mentioned when we talked about South Carolina and Virginia, how well the SEC has done against the ACC this year, that's going on in the Gator Bowl. NC State, Texas A&M, A&M up to a touchdown favorite now where they opened in the 4.5 range.
Yeah, and some of it, I mean, NC State's top wide receiver, Kelvin Harmon's out. Their top linebacker, Jermaine Pratt's out. He's their leading tackler. That's concerning. Ryan Finley's final game, I mean, he's had a great career there at NC State. The transfer from Boise has done really well. But, man, if I'm buying stock in a program in college football in the next 5 years, I'm looking for the most bang for my buck. I think I'd draft Nebraska number one. I think I'd draft Texas A&M, too. I think it's a team much better than their 8-4 record indicates. Only losses to number one Alabama, number two Clemson. Aggies covered both of those games. Decent quarterback in Kellen Mond. He can be a little shaky at times, but he's athletic, dual threat. Williams and running backs, I think the number three rusher in the country. And I think in a factor here, not only you look at the SEC against the ACC, but how about Jimbo Fisher and Mike Elko, who was the defensive coordinator? They prepped for NC State last year while Fisher was at Florida State and Elko was at Notre Dame. So I'll take the Aggies here minus the 7.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a strong angle there. And correct me if I'm wrong, Elko was at Wake Forest too. So it's not like, you know, he's a stranger to NC State. I mean, you know, that certainly helps here. You know, I mean, Florida State playing NC State every year, and then Elko's seeing the Wolfpack quite a bit too, especially here during the Dave Doran years. I think it's a really strong angle there from you. All right, let's go to Tuesday as we kick off 2019 with the Outback Bowl. Iowa, Mississippi State, the Bulldogs laying 7 here in this one.
Yeah, I think both teams, I mean, much better as far as the power rating goes than their 8-4 records indicate. Both teams similar. I mean, their strength is on the defense side of the ball. I mean, I don't think people are giving enough credit to Mississippi State's defense. Number one in the country in scoring defense this year. And you really thought Joe Moorhead would have the biggest impact on the offense side of the ball. Not necessarily been the case. Iowa's, you know, just as good, you know, slightly behind Mississippi State. I mean, they're number 7 as far as total defense, number 11 in scoring defense, lower scoring game. Give me Iowa plus the 7. It's a little bit of a concern that Iowa hasn't had great success against SEC teams, although Ferentz is 9-6 against the spread in bowl games. It's Moorhead's first. I think that little bit of an advantage there gives me a slight lean on the Hawkeyes.
271-272, the Citrus Bowl. Penn State, 6.5-point favorites against Kentucky.
I'm going to lean with the Nittany Lions. I just think, generally speaking, Kentucky's a little overrated. Team wasn't in top 20 in the AP poll and the college football playoff. I only have, like, number 36 in my power ratings, ranking them 1 through 130. And it's a team that only covered 2 of their last 7 games. I think Penn State can stack the line of scrimmage, focus in on Benny Snell. You've seen Penn State against run-heavy offenses this year, Pitt, Wisconsin, Maryland. Penn State won and covered all 3 of those games. They only allowed 6 points per game in those. So I think Penn State will have success on the defense side of the ball. And offensively, Trace McSorley's final game, I think it'll go out a winner. And I think they'll go out a winner when it comes to the pocketbook. I'll take the Nittany Lions.
I like Penn State, too. This is one of my stronger bowl plays as well. I mean, I've been down on Kentucky all year, as everybody knows that listens to this show. And, you know, I mean, Kentucky is in the 38 range for me, too. So you and I are on the same wavelength there with them. And Penn State, too, they kind of found Miles Sanders as the year went along. And that's a big help for Trace McSorley because he didn't have much on the outside with all the wide receivers they lost last year. Having a good running back is a big help. And I think Sanders – really came on in the second part of the year, and maybe that helps Penn State going forward. I don't know.
Oh, there's no question about it, and they've recruited exceptionally well, and they'll miss McSorley, but, I mean, they got another guy there behind them that's going to be pretty damn good. So I don't think James Franklin's going anywhere. I think he's slightly overrated. I don't think he's an elite coach, But he's still a very good one. And as far as the talent, it's coming in there. I mean, Penn State's not going anywhere, folks, if you're looking for them to take a step back.
All right, the Fiesta Bowl, LSU, UCF. LSU, a 7.5-point favorite here for this one. Is this the game that UCF finally loses?
Yeah, I do think that. I mean, 7.5 is a tough number, right, to lay it. But I would lean LSU. I'm just significant advantage. I mean, LSU's run game against the UCF run defense. I mean, they have allowed 290 rushing yards per game in their last five. I get it. Darrell Max looked good in the AAC championship game to lead that come from behind win over Memphis, but still nowhere near as good as Mackenzie Milton, that quarterback for UCF. You know, unlike Auburn last year, I think LSU will take them a little bit more serious, although they got a couple players sitting out that's a little bit of a worry, including the cornerback Greedy Williams for LSU. But I just think LSU is a little bit more motivated than what UCF saw last year in Auburn. And obviously without their quarterback, I think it'll be a little bit of a different story. I'll take the Tigers here minus the points. Even though the market, I know most handicappers, at least from what I'm reading, is on UCF, although the bettors are saying differently as far as the sharps. They're more on the LSU side.
Let's go to the Rose Bowl, 275-276, Washington and Ohio State. The Buckeyes, 6.5 is the consensus number out there. Obviously, there are some sevens at some of the more public shops as well. What do you think about this game?
I love the Buckeyes. I know it's a square pick, and I'm going to be against the Sharks. But, I mean, if you watch the games, I mean, Washington just doesn't have enough. Jake Browning is actually – you know, I think he's regressed as a quarterback, and I just don't think he can beat the Buckeyes over the top. So he doesn't scare me on that side of the ball. I think Washington's at a significant talent disadvantage. We've seen it show up in some of the bigger games the last couple of years, Alabama game, Penn State last year in the Fiesta Bowl, Auburn this year. I mean, Peterson's a great coach, but I think that if the Buckeyes are properly motivated, you saw what they did to Michigan, and I think Michigan's superior to Washington. Maybe not as far as the coaching staff goes, but then when it comes to player personnel, they are. Myers 11-3 in bowl games. It's final one. I mean, the Buckeyes should be amped up. It's only their third Rose Bowl game in 35 years. They'll have the crowd edge. When the game is priced good for the Buckeyes since 2005, when they're laying less than 7 points or they're in the underdog role, they're 34-17 against the number. So small favorite, or at least a reasonable favorite, or an underdog Buckeyes or a strong pick. Yeah, I know it's square, but I'm going to take the Buckeyes. I have some of my biggest bets of the year on the Buckeyes in this game. And Pac-12 sucks. I mean, just flat out sucks. They're now 2-15 against the spread in bowl games last 3-plus seasons, 0-2 this year. Pac-12 sucks. I can't say it any more clearly than that. I'll take the Buckeyes. They roll, win by double digits.
All right, that sounds good to me. Sounds like a good way for this Buckeyes fan to kick off 2019. One more bowl game to hit here. That is the Sugar Bowl, Texas and Georgia. Georgia, anywhere from a 12 to a 13-point favorite in this one against Tom Herman, who, as we all know, phenomenal in the underdog role.
Yeah, but that's starting to get priced into it. I mean, didn't cover against Oklahoma. But I'll still lean the Texas side just because it comes down to me motivation. Georgia is a quarter away from playing in the college football playoff. Blow the game against Alabama yet again, and now they're relegated to play a 9-4 Texas team. So I'm not sure they're fully motivated. Texas should be excited. I thought they, you know, relatively speaking, overachieved this year, getting to the Big 12 championship game, although that was a little bit of a disappointment there against Oklahoma. That game was close, though. It was tied fourth quarter, and now you're playing in the Sugar Bowl. Herman's 12-2 against the number as a head coach in the dog roll, 23-2. If you go back to his assistant days at the Buckeyes in Iowa State, Ellinger's a very solid quarterback. He should be healthy. His shoulder is bothering him at the end of the year. So I'll hook him horns here plus the big number.
All right. Well, we hit all the college bowl games that I wanted to, so I'm very, very happy about that. Let's sum up this week in the NFL very quickly. What is your plan of attack?
That's a great point. I mean, obviously motivation and players rested. I mean, this isn't 2005 when it comes to the world of handicap. A lot of this is already priced in the numbers. So when you see the Giants favored by 6, I mean, it's already, you know, taking into consideration that Dallas is likely to rest players. You know, I pick my spots. I probably fewer bets than normal when it comes to a typical NFL week for me. But I like some picks. I mean, I know Buffalo just took some money in the marketplace today. I agree with that. I don't think Miami shows up when the temperature is going to be in the 20s and Buffalo's playing with revenge from a game they dominated, but somehow anywhere but the scoreboard when it came to the Dolphins earlier this year. So I'll pick my spots and probably only bet a few games, probably only bet a few when it comes to the Nugget contest. Cautionary, but I'm not like, you know, some people that say, hey, you just can't bet and take the week off the NFL. I still think there's some value. And I'll probably fade a line mover, too. I see Chicago's getting some money in the marketplace. I'll wait and see if that number can go to 4 at most shops. I kind of like the Vikings there.
Is this a week where, you know, you still bet your standard amounts, or do you sort of, you know, put in some personal hedging, so to speak, by cutting down your unit size a little bit?
You know, I get a little more exotic. I believe, and you know, you're right. I probably don't bet as much overall as far as the unit size goes, but I start getting a little exotic in some in-game wagering. So, I mean, if Kansas City is crushing, and obviously all of this depends on how the game's going, but if they're crushing Oakland at the start, then maybe I wager a little bit in-game with Denver, because obviously that would impact the Chargers, knowing that they can't clinch the AFC West if Kansas City wins. So maybe a little bit more of, I would say, parlay action in some games, and a little more exotic betting and a little bit more in-game live betting, especially in the second half of some of these games. The NFL's done a tremendous job compared to 10 years ago. They really don't give you a lot of opportunity if certain teams win at 1 o'clock, the 1 o'clock window. You know, you can play against some other teams at 4 o'clock. They pretty much eliminated that from the marketplace.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, I talk about it each and every week. I mean, why the hell not? I mean, if you bet my best bets all year long, NFL or college, every single pick, I'm not, you know, excluding, you know, the month of September, or, you know, excluding, you know, good teams with left-handed quarterbacks, you know, west of the Mississippi. Every single pick this year, if you bet on best bets, 72-42, 63%, and we'll take a bigger game sample size. How about 4 years and 600-plus games, 56.5% all-time are those best bets over the last 4 years. It's the newsletter. You get a game write-up on all remaining bowl games. You get all playoff action, week 17 in the NFL, best bets, power ratings, computer-projected lines, trends of the week, logs, you name it, it's in there. $50. It's actually $49 for the rest of the season. All the way through the Super Bowl, go to bradpowersports.com. It's called the Powers Picks Newsletter.
And I guess one last thing I'll ask you here, since we've wrapped up the football portion of the show, that transition to college basketball, what's that looking like for you right now?
A little slow, to be perfectly frank. I fully get involved right after the new year. But right now, if you ask me, hey, how's UTEP basketball doing right now? I'll be perfectly frank, I don't have a clue. So I'd really get involved come right after New Year's Day. It's a little bit of a slow start for me, but we're usually up and running by the end of the month as far as January goes, and we really know what the hell we're doing when it really matters come March.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, it may not be a bad thing to jump in at this point in time, because you get a lot of noise from the non-conference portion of the season. Now with conference play, you know, it's maybe not a bad time for somebody like you who reads the market so well to start getting involved.
That's a great point, and that's exactly what I do. And where do I find my advantages? You know, it's not rocket science. A lot of times when I find my advantages when teams jump into conference play, quite simple, go to kenpom.com and look at the differences between strength of schedules, because there's a lot of teams that get propped up, you know, with a 10-2, 11-1 record against a relatively weak non-conference schedule. Against a team that played a much tougher conference schedule. You find value in the marketplace, and I know that's handicapping 101, but, man, it really worked for me last year during the month of January, and that's my game plan at least going into this year.
So you can follow Brad's work on Twitter, at Brad Powers, the number 7, and bradpowerssports.com. Brad, appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much, man. Happy New Year. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, man. Happy New Year to you, my friend. Have a healthy, happy, and wealthy New Year.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, professional handicapper, over at bradpowerssports.com. Glad we got to run through all of those college football bowl games there. Also, some good introductory thoughts for Week 17. We'll expand on that a little bit more here in our next segment. But, again, so many considerations here at this time of the year. Very busy around the holidays. And, of course, if you are making that transition into college basketball as well, strength of schedule, definitely something that you want to factor in quite a bit to your handicapping. We got one more guest here for this Thursday edition of Bangin' Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing good. So a few minutes late calling in here. I was trying to get my bowl plays up today. It's a third round of the bowls. We put them up in three different weeks in a row here. So doing some last-minute fact-checking, getting that going, and recovering from a lot of holiday. And so I hope everybody had a great holiday. You as well, Adam.
I hope you did as well, Tony. And, the bowl season here, I mean, Brad and I were talking about this before we started recording. There's 40 bowl games or 39, whatever it is. And all of a sudden, it feels like there's 30 of them over the next 5 days. I mean, we hit 19 of them in that previous segment. It's just crazy the way that they, spread these out so much. And then all of a sudden, there's a ton of them.
Yeah, and I kind of weeded them out. I've only had 8 bowl plays up, and I've won 6 out of them. I haven't, I've kept it. I didn't spread myself thin with them. I just found the ones I thought had the best value and kind of weed them out so you can see the forest, because there's so many trees in it. And there's probably 8 or 9 more that really have some line value. That last night was a perfect example of just, guys, I was at a sports bar. It's interesting. I was at a sports bar here in Las Vegas, my favorite little watering hole. I broadcast my YouTube out of there sometimes as well, like a live deal. But anyway, it was interesting to watch the people, the patrons in the bar on the TCU-Cal game, So I just sampled. I said, why'd you take them? Oh, because they're TCU. Oh, I'm from the West, so I took Cal. And I go, but what was the reason you took them? Well, just to have action on the game there. I don't know. Nobody could come up with a clear-cut reason why they took a game. These are sometimes many recreational gamblers. Of course, if they buy your pick and you're wrong, then you're a piece of crap. And, but at the end of the day, I found it very interesting to – and then you watch the game, and it could have went either way. It was a coin flip game. It really was. And there's a lot of what I call coin flip games. And I don't really like selling or getting involved in, with my own personal money, games I think that are coin flip. And there's a lot of them out there. So finding ones with some value and keeping it low volume, we've had 6 out of 8 wins in bowls, and 2 of them were 6-unit top plays, and they both cashed. And Army was one of them. I thought there was a clear-cut advantage. When you look for bowl games, you look for advantages. Fired their defensive coordinator, couldn't stop anybody. Their quarterback was out, and still Army's laying less than a touchdown. There's value in that number, and it's hard to find the value with so many games out there. And odds makers, a lot of times, a little public perception, goes a long way. So you got to kind of read between the lines on these bowls.
All right, well, let's go ahead and hit on a few of these here and see what we can come up with for these games. And I want to start with a game coming up here on Monday, and then we'll cycle back to the semifinal games on Saturday. Missouri and Oklahoma State. I know you're a Big 12 guy. We've talked about that before here on the show. Missouri, of course, used to be in the Big 12. Oklahoma State's still there. This is the Liberty Bowl. Missouri's an 8-point favorite in this game. Total on this one up in the 74 range. Tony, you got any opinions on this game?
Well, I think it's going to be a track meet. I really do, to shoot out. Oklahoma State all year long to me was kind of an enigma wrapped in a riddle, and you couldn't figure them out from week to week. They a giant killer 1 week, and the next week they get blown out by, somebody, and it's just like you couldn't figure out, where they were coming from. And I think the bottom line is here, I really think this is maybe Mike Gundy's worst job of coaching since he's been at Okie State. And I don't know whether it was he toyed with the idea of going down to Tennessee, and then they threw a bunch of money at him, and then, you know, T. Boone Pickens comes back and throws more money at him to keep him at Oklahoma State, whether he lost his – he took the eye off the ball, so to speak. But I think at the end of the day, you know, you got a Drew Locke, you know, thrown for 25 touchdowns this year with 3,000 yards. Obviously, he's probably going to be one of the top three or four quarterbacks taken in the draft this year, and he's got a healthy receiving core now. They've got a great running back. You know, this, that, and the other. Their defense in Missouri always concerns me, especially against a spread attack. So I think they're going to trade punches on the scoreboard. If anything, I know that number is over 70. At the end of the day, I'm not willing to lay eight. I would only look at the points in this game as taken, not laying, because I don't think Missouri can be trusted laying 8 points anywhere when they give up a lot, because they do give up a lot of points. And I think that Oklahoma State's going to put up, you know, 35 points in this game, and I probably think that Missouri can maybe put up 41, maybe more. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be – it'll be an entertaining game, I can tell you that much, Adam, but I can only look at the over.
Well, and this is one of those things, you know, you mentioned Mike Gundy and him possibly taking that Tennessee job and then circling back to Stillwater. And, you know, I was reading an article from one of the beat writers there in Stillwater or one of the other Oklahoma papers talking about, you know, how tired Mike Gundy looks, how in his press conferences he just doesn't seem to have the same level of emotion. And there's some friction there between the AD and Mike Gundy because of the program's recruiting rankings, how they're, you know, they're middle of the pack for a team that's had for a program that's had a lot of 10-win seasons and things like that. So there may be more than meets the eye there at Oklahoma State. And, you know, that's why it's important sometimes to pick up those local rags. And, you know, because that was a game I was looking at for the Golden Nugget, taking Oklahoma State, and just reading some negative things about Gundy and maybe where he feels the program is, it kind of kept me off of that game.
Yeah, I don't know. He's lost, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, he's lost a little bit of his swagger. I agree with you. You know, just his body language. In press conferences, he seemed win, lose, or draw. He just seemed disinterested this year, and I don't know whether he needs to, you know, take some time off and whatever. But you know, the thing of it is, too, Oklahoma State lost a ton of talent last year. Mason Rudolph was an absolute stud. You know, Washington. Who's playing for the Steelers now, you know, you couldn't, you know, at wide receiver, they lost a ton of guys. Cornelius just, you know, didn't look good, you know, but, you know, they put up 501 yards. He put up over 500 yards against Oklahoma, had 6 touchdown passes, you know, in against West Virginia. You know, and those are a couple of defenses, I think, that rival what Missouri's going to bring to the table. And they put up a ton of yards in those two games, which is why it's got me leaning over. And I'm telling you, Drew Locke and his trio of wide receivers, and they do have a decent running back there to kind of keep your defense honest. I think it's going to give Okie State a lot of problems here. But, you know, at the end of the day here, both these teams can't be trusted laying big numbers. I just think that the points are going to be in play here. And usually you say, I'll take big points if it's going to be a low scoring game, because it brings points into play. But also, if you got two high octane teams like this, Adam, that are going to go up and down the field and be gunning for it, you're going to see everybody going for it on fourth down. You're seeing a lot of that already, because there's no tomorrow. The only games that matter where teams aren't going to go for it on fourth down on their own 35 are going to be in the final four games, you know, where they're playing for something. All they're doing is playing for pride and a win here, so teams are taking a lot of chances. And I think you're going to see some of that happen in this Mizzou-Okie State game as well. So, you know, again, I think it's going to be an entertaining game. I am interested, a little bit hesitant to take the points, but I can only take them because I don't know what Gundy and his team's going to bring to the table. Honestly, you don't know what you're going to get from week to week.
All right, let's talk about the college football playoff semifinals here. Oklahoma and Alabama is the first one we'll talk about. Again, it is the late game, but the first game by rotation number. That's usually how I try to sort the games with the guests here. Alabama's a 14-point favorite in the Orange Bowl. Total on this game, 77, came down from 81 where it was sometime last week. Any thoughts on this one, Tony?
Well, who wants to get in front of that freight train? You know, you've got a quarterback, Tua, there at Alabama that was released. I think I read a press release yesterday that said he's about 80-85%, which means he's probably going to go. I'm telling you, the thing that worries me about this, you know, I could easily see Alabama having 50 points in this game. I really could. Because Oklahoma's defense is that bad. They're just not a good defense. They're, you know, 1-point win at West Virginia where they gave up 50. I mean, when you're giving up the numbers they gave up to the teams that they played this year, you know, in the Big 12, the Big 12 is a little bit different than the SEC and the fact that if you want to win the Big 12, you just got to outscore everybody because nobody really brings any defense to the table in the Big 12 anymore. Oklahoma used to, you know. They fired their defensive coordinator a third or fourth game into the season. You know, Mike Stoops is gone. You know, Saban is not going to let up on the throttle if he gets them down. You got the Heisman jinx working against you. You know, Murray is a fantastic player. This is probably the most prolific offense that Alabama has seen all year, bar none. You know, so I think they'll expose Alabama's defense a little bit here because they just haven't seen something like this. Given that, Alabama's also had 3 weeks to prepare for it. You know, and I'm sure that Saban will draw up some stuff to confuse Murray a little bit on defensive schemes and different looks they're going to give him. You really can't blitz the kid because if you miss on the first tackle in the blitz, he can take off and run at 70 yards. So you really got to they're going to be a lot more concerned about containing him versus trying to stop him or rattling with blitzes because he's just too quick and too good for it. So, yeah, at the end of the day, though, with a defense that bad against a team, Alabama is the best team in the country. They're 2 touchdowns better than anybody in the country. You know, even with their B-plus game, you know, and the other thing, too, is even when they're down, you know, like and they have been a couple of times, even when they're down, they find ways to turn it on when they have to get it done, just like the SEC championship game. I just don't think Oklahoma has seen a defense like this at the end of the day. I don't have any action on this game whatsoever. I think Alabama beats them by 20. That's what I think.
Well, and something I want to touch on then, you know, obviously, you know, you're in the business of picking winners for yourself and for your clients, and you know, it's got to be tough to not put up plays on these massive games because, you know, that's your clients get upset. They want action on Oklahoma, Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and the thing is, sometimes there's just no value in that game.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of times these big marquee games, what I'll do, I have that YouTube channel I tell you about all the time on the show. I've got over 6,500 daily subscribers. In games like this, I'll just say go to the video. I'll put it out for free. I'll give an opinion, but it doesn't have any value to me in terms of a premium play. Not that the free plays are junk because there's 60% over 500 plays on that YouTube channel, which is unbelievable. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm trying to sell winners and not picks. And most of the people that have followed me over the years know that. But also on the other side of the coin, Adam, because I'm on the other side of the fence and you are, you're not as selling selections for a living as a handicapper. I can tell you, sales, if you just want to look at it from a business perspective, are not always, everybody thinks, oh, it's a Super Bowl. You know, you're going to sell X amount of dollars over the weekend. A lot of these big games, like the national title games, the Final Four, national title game of football, the Final Four in college basketball, where it's a, you know, has a huge public interest. Most guys or gals, there are some gals that wager, most guys or gals use their own opinion for those games. The only thing you're selling, like during the Super Bowl, they want your prop plays. I sell more prop plays than I do side and total because everybody's made up their mind on who they like and they're going to take the team they like in these big games. You know, I like Oklahoma. I like Alabama. I like Notre Dame. I like Clemson. You know, that's who I'm taking. I'm not going to buy that play. It's a singled out marquee deal. And so the public approach is from a buying perspective as a handicapper, they approach these big games a lot different than they do week-to-week cards. You know, they're much more interested in what I'm taking in week 17 on a tricky Sunday in the NFL than they are Alabama, Oklahoma. They're going to make up their own mind and bet it that way.
All right, so let's talk about the other semifinal game here, then, Notre Dame and Clemson. You've got Clemson, a 12.5-point favorite. That's pretty much wide total on this game, more reasonable in the 56-56.5 range. How about this one, Tony? Any thoughts on this game?
Well, I've got a play on this game, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm thinking one of these two games has to be competitive, and I'm not so sure it's the Alabama game. I think it might be this one. That being said, do I think Clemson could put them away? Yeah, I do. But also in this game, you know, there's also an opportunity for Notre Dame, you know, to who quite frankly has a better resume from a scheduling perspective coming in here. You know, and then you've got a suspension there on Clemson, which is going to hurt them a little bit. So I tell you what, there's a lot more factors in this game here that are handicappable, that a lot more variables that can tip the scales one way or the other than Alabama, Oklahoma. You know, that's how I feel about this game.
All right, so let's transition over to the NFL side of things then. Week 17, playoff scenarios, teams sitting out, lame duck head coaches, so on and so forth. What is your approach to week 17, Tony?
Pretty much like the preseason. You find one hidden gem in there, you know, one game with meaning for both teams where you can use some statistical things to your advantage. You know, there are certain teams that have gained some momentum. I'll give you a perfect example, and it's not a game I'm going to be on. But a team that's gained some momentum, that's playing for something, and a perfect example is the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend. You know, Washington Redskins, they're done. They're not going anywhere. You know, they got a bad quarterback situation. They've got injuries all over the board. And you've seen Philadelphia now beat a couple of really good teams. And Nick Foles is, you know, he's like, you know, hey, honey, hold my beer. Here we go again. You know, he's right back in the same position he was last year, and they've responded and played a lot better. And, you know, they're laying a little less than a touchdown here, and they're playing for an outside shot at the playoffs here. I mean, they need, I think, Minnesota losers. I haven't looked at all the scenario. I'm just starting the NFL. I've got two games circled I'm going to take. I'm going to avoid the rest. But I did take a short look at this one, just as an example. You have a team with momentum rallying behind a quarterback, and bear in mind, this quarterback, I believe, was the MVP in the Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, last year, won the Super Bowl for this team, got handed the reins and responded, you know, like a very good quarterback. He's got a lot of experience, and they're playing for something. I think that's a team that's really going to bring it to the table, that's got momentum. I'd like to see the number around 4.5 or 5, honestly, but I think they're probably 10 points better than Washington this weekend. So there's one that has some value in it that you know a team's going to show up and bring it.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, a lot of this stuff is priced into the line already. And then you have to decide, you know, if it's priced in enough to keep you off of the game, you know, and that's a perfect case there with Philadelphia. You know, you look at a game like Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, for example. It's priced into the line there that Pittsburgh absolutely has to win that game, but they could win that game and it still may not mean anything. So if they're looking up at the scoreboard or, you know, someone's getting updates on their phone about what Baltimore is doing with Cleveland, it's really hard to lay 14.5 with Pittsburgh, who may no show in the second half if nothing matters for them. So, you know, for Philadelphia, I think it is one of those things that Foles, they look rejuvenated. For Pittsburgh, you know, they may just pack it in and fold the tent in the second half. It's a great week for live betting, really.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. This is a week for halftime lines, that you're going to have to pay attention to all the games on your DirecTV package, which I do. You know, I have multiple TVs, you know, and I'm even so the screen's a little bigger. I can kind of move my eyes around and see what the lines are coming out in the second half, and that's where you make the money. You just kind of wait and see who's going to show up and who isn't. You know, I don't think that Cincinnati's probably going to show up. You know, Pittsburgh is poorly coached. You know, I'm sure we have a lot of Mike Tomlin fans. Pittsburgh's a national public team. Everybody likes us, a ton of Steeler fans out here, believe it or not. Even back in Kansas City where I have a ton of Steeler fans, you know, but I'm going to piss somebody off. But I think he's done a piss poor job of coaching that team this year, and whether he's lost them in the locker room going into this game and whether they're deflated, seeing some results come in, you know, if I was a coach, I'd isolate them from any television or any news media updates and have them solely focus on that game. If I was a head coach, you know, obviously not smart enough to be one, but it's going to be real interesting. I've seen Cincinnati play here recently, and they just give a half-hearted effort, you know, in the last couple, three games they played. And they've got injury issues and all kinds of issues at Cincinnati. And I'll be shocked if Marvin, you know, if Lewis is on Black Monday, if Lewis is still around. It's time for a regime change there at Cincinnati. And, you know, maybe Pittsburgh can come out. And I guess Connor's coming back this week, which helps them a lot. So, it has no value up front. Halftime, you might find some value.
I want to elaborate a little bit more on the coaches thing just to finish up this segment, Tony. You know, I think in college it's a big deal because these coaches and coordinators are sitting in a kid's living room, parents, you know, a kid who's really transitioning from, you know, being a teenager to becoming an adult. It's a lot more emotional when a coordinator leaves or a coach leaves, something like that. Do NFL players give a shit? I mean, everybody's an adult. You know, everybody understands what's going on, knows the business. Do you think NFL players really care that much with, you know, sending off a lame duck head coach, a winner, or trying to save somebody's job, something like that?
I think a lot of them are trying to save their own ass, honestly, from a player's perspective. A lot of these guys have incentive clauses in their bonus that they're close to, you know, to pay them more money. A guy might need 7 or 8 tackles, or he might need a pick, or running back might need, you know, 87 yards to reach a $200,000 bonus or whatever. And they're professionals, you know, they're all professionals. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, every Tuesday these players get a game check, you know, people, and I'll just, you know, like last week they were saying, well, I think I said it on your show. I said, Aaron Rodgers going to play or not going to play against the Jets. If he's healthy, he gets a $1.4 million game check every Tuesday for the previous week. You know, if you're a franchise owner, you know, you're telling the coach he's playing, I'm paying him, you know, so they're going to bring it. And, you know, a lot of these teams that had disappointing seasons with good leaders at the helm, so to speak, especially, you know, on the field, like an Aaron Rodgers, I think they're going to bring it this week against Detroit. I mean, I just think that's a team that's, you know, that let's go out on a high note here and let's build momentum for next year. And let's put these guys away. And so, you know, there's a lot of different variables involved in these games. But at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, on the other hand, I really can't say they throw in the towel, but there's so many teams you see that, like in the second half of a game, they just don't come out with whatever the coach was telling them, they're not responding to. That's why Hugh Jackson got fired this year. The team, when they were having issues and struggling and come out with no fire in their belly in the second half, you know, you have a coach you've had a coach that's lost a team, and sometimes it seems like the players don't do anything above and beyond the call of duty. You know, one team that I've noticed this year that's really responded to their coach in a bad year, that probably has some value here, you know, is the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills, you know, they're trying to break in this Allen kid. He's doing everything he can possibly do to win football games. They've given almost everybody they played a ball game. You know, their defense has played well. Their offense has not played well. And here you have a team that's, you know, got a 5-win team taking on a 7-win team here that probably holds some value of -4.5. You know, and they are at home, but that's a team I've noticed that win, lose, or draw, that those players have played really hard for that coach the entire season. And I think that they're, you can look at a couple of teams like that hold some value, you know, this year. And I think that the Bills might be one of them as we're talking about, you know, this scenario about players playing hard and giving a rat's ass. Buffalo might be that team this weekend that puts up a double-digit win because the players have just bought into the program and they're on a learning curve. And you better watch out for Buffalo Bills next year, I can tell you that.
Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. What's going on over there right now, Tony?
Well, we got our bowl releases coming out today at 5 Central over there, the last batch of bowls. Like I said, we're 6-2. We're on a wonderful run in the NBA. I've got a top play in the NBA tonight, Adam. I went on a 21-8 run, and now we've kind of been hitting and missing here, but I found a game tonight that's got a lot of value. And of course, college basketball started out really well for us. Last three Saturdays, 11-2 against the spread documented, and playing a lot of sharp sides out here in Vegas. So be sure and get over to DocSports.com, check it out. Every play is guaranteed. And of course, check me out on the YouTube channel. My NFL line report comes out today. I've got a lot of subscribers over there. Just type in Tony George / Doc Sports over there, and you can check out a daily video, and we give everybody an update on what's on the site that over there as well.
Well, with college football coming to a close here very soon, we'll be doing some more NBA and college basketball with Tony on the segments. So definitely something for everyone to look forward to as we head on into the new year. Tony George, Doc Sports is the website. Follow him on YouTube as well. Appreciate the time, Tony. Thank you so much, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
We'll talk to you again, I believe. Is it next year?
Yes, sir, next year.
Talk to you next year, Adam.
There you go. There's Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports, at T-George Sports on Twitter. Good Thursday show here. We got one more show for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is our Friday show, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, and then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Make sure you go over to YouTube, check out my Thursday 3-pack video. I got thoughts on the Pinstripe Bowl and then also a game in the NBA and a game in the NHL tonight. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.